Welcome into the Train with the Best podcast. I'm Craig Hoffman, three wide today with Chris Gores. And hey, look, Chris, wifey's on the pod.
There she is.
Rachel.
Trouble, if you're watching this, she's trouble.
No one is ever seeing the video of this. The Hoffman household is not in video camera ready status right now. Rachel is sitting in a place in our home next to some of the plants and does look like the Kim Kardashian emerging from the leaves meme. So that's a good time. But Rachel is with us today because we want to talk about running. And we're kind of going to do a mock client programming situation, really mock clients program situation. Rachel is a freshly certified running coach who has been on her own running information gathering journey for, at this point, a year. Year and a half. God, when is that when we started our 10-minute, like, let's just run on the treadmill for 10 minutes. And now now there's a marathon in the future. Not one picked out yet, but somewhere in the future there is a marathon. But the idea is we're going to take kind of two different paths, a client A and a client B, if you will. Both clients have the same time allotment to work out, 5 days a week, 1 hour a day, which is, I would say, pretty regular in terms of availability based off, you know, human being schedules. And one is someone who's been running for a long time and wants to add strength training for whatever reasons. And client B is the opposite, someone who has been a strength training client or athlete and then starts wanting to run. And how do they build up into getting to be a better runner? And we'll classify better runner as being able to do more mileage, being able to go faster, having it feel better and easier, and something that for them, running becomes a longevity piece over time. So eventually, years down the line, these people meld to being one. But when they start, they are very, very different. So Rachel, actually, let's start with your kind of high-level thoughts on this. 1,000-foot view. The strength trainer who wants to be a runner, the runner who wants to add some strength training. What are the things that you would be thinking about if someone came to you asking those questions?
Well, one thing I should have thought of when you thought of this prompt is that the amount of running the runner wants to do is like the biggest factor here. And so the notion that someone has 1 hour a week, 5 days a week, I should say, to run might not be sustainable or effective for somebody who's trying to run a marathon or a half marathon, because that long run is going to need to be long. So the 1 hour parameter is a little different. But for somebody who's just like, you know what, I don't think that I've been doing the best with my cardiovascular health and I'm looking to challenge my aerobic capacity, we can work with that. And so I think there are a couple of things, and some of them are really popular these days, right? A lot of people are talking about like the 80-20 rule in running and the notion that most of your runs should be easy runs, and that is factually correct. And I think Chris posted the other day about how discipline in like athletic performance and training is really about doing the not sexy work. Is it cool to sprint? Yes, it's my favorite. But I was a strict sprinter and not a strict runner, and I couldn't run effectively for long amounts of time and derive joy from it. And so some of the work is just plodding along, feeling like you're not going anywhere fast, watching people definitely pass you. It's a lot of really not cool mobility work to make you more effective. But those things, the discipline around those things, I think is good for all athletes to build good habits around. Good like recovery hygiene, if you will, taking the time to adequately rest and fuel and hydrate and stretch and mobilize and strengthen. And like, there's a lot of homework that goes into being good at anything. And I think that that is especially true in running and hopefully increasingly popular. So that's like one big bucket. I think the second thing I would note is that for a lot of runners, it's easy to get swept into a group program or a group like publicly available program, but running is highly individualized and it should be based super specifically on you. And I think that there's a lot of crossover with strength training. It's easy to go on Instagram and see like, oh, this person has this workout and they're doing these things on a Bosu ball with a kettlebell and a dumbbell overhead and they're doing an RFE, and it's like, what are you trying to actually accomplish here? It just looks cool on Instagram. And that is also very common in running. my cert was really adamant that group runs are fun and can be good social activities, but if you're serious about getting better at running and also most importantly avoiding injury, your track club ain't it. It's not it. And so that's really important. And those are two things that I think are relevant for both strength clients and running clients.
Yeah, definitely. I think of like if a novice person tried like a Claire Thomas workout. Chris, I don't know if you're familiar with Claire. She was actually a D1 track runner at Oregon, but has become like a fitness influencer person. Mm-hmm. And she's got great workouts that she posts all the time, but they're very high volume. And if a new person who is new to strength training tried a Claire Thomas workout, they wouldn't be able to move for a week. So that would obviously not be ideal. And that's like showing up to a track club with a bunch of people that have been doing it for, you know, however many years. And, you know, some of those track clubs are highly unorganized and highly unprofessional in the programming, but that's a different podcast. And then just being like, oh, I'm going to do what they do. Like, it's a recipe for disaster. Back to the original question though, Chris, like, someone comes to you that for you would probably be the runner who wants to be introduced to strength training. What are some of the very initial things that you're going to ensure to work on them with?
So first of all, I want to get into some of that social media stuff, right? Like, I think social media is for our entertainment, and the most entertaining part of fitness is going to be those hard kick-ass workouts that leave everybody sore for a week where you can't walk and you feel like, oh, I made it through and I'm part of this track club or I'm part of this CrossFit group or whatever it is, right? Like, that's just always going to be a part of the fitness world. And then there are people who maybe try that or don't want to try that and realize, have the foresight to see, hey, maybe that's not the best for me. And then they look for somebody like myself or somebody like Rachel to coach them through a plan that's going to be more customized and help them get to their goals in a more reasonable way, in a more clever way, where we're just not just throwing stuff out there. So I don't hate the social media influencers. I don't hate them. That's always going to be a part of our industry, and we need that. We need people to do that to motivate people. But, you know, when I'm thinking about programming, the first thing that you say is, you said this client has 5 days a week, 1 hour. Well, there's no laws that say I have to take that entire hour, right? Like, when we talk about food and having a great relationship with food, one of the things I always say to my fellow Filipino friends is, like, don't listen to your tita. Don't listen to your auntie that says finish every single bite. You don't have to do that anymore, because, you know, you're just going to develop a terrible relationship with food, thinking that you have to finish every single plate, every single bite. And if you just listen to your body and eat when it's time to eat, meaning like when you're hungry, or finish when it's time to finish, when you're not hungry anymore, you can develop a good relationship with food. And if you want to develop a good relationship with running or a good relationship with working out and strength training, you don't have to do the whole freaking hour, right? Especially in the beginning, you're not going to need an hour of running as somebody who is just a strength trainer, somebody that strength trains and doesn't run a lot. You're not going to run for an hour. That's going to kill you, right? Same thing with somebody who's running. If you're coming in and you want to now do an hour of strength training 5 days a week, that's going to kill you, right? So we don't have to do that, right? But the first thing that I'm looking at is, all right, can I get 3 days a week? So for somebody who's strength training, I'm going to start off with, hey, let's leave your 3 days a week of strength training, 2 days a week of running. One that's going to be a more interval-based run, and then one's going to be like your long run. And your long run might only be 20 minutes for the first 2 weeks, and then we bump it up to 25 and 30 and things like that, and then just pack that with some stretching and some foam rolling or whatever else that we need, right? Same thing with your interval run, right? Maybe that's only going to be 1 mile of intervals when you break it all down, whether that comes into 16 100-yard sprints, right? However it is that you want to break that down, right? And then we just add to that. Now, opposite for the runner, right? So if you're a runner, keep running 3 days a week. And then 2 days a week, let's do your strength training, right? And one day is going to be a little bit more of a functional strength day. And then one day we're going to start to lift quote-unquote heavy, right, where we simplify the movements and we get you to produce a lot of force. You know, things like squat and deadlift, pull-ups are going to be a great one for runners. I'm probably going to, from a movement standpoint, I'm probably going to stay away from a lot of heavy bench, heavy push stuff, because their shoulders are typically always rounded forward already anyways. So I'm not going to continue to make that pattern worse. But those are the things that I'm thinking about, and that may be for the first month or two. And then that flips, right? So for the runner, now we'll take running down to 2 days a week, add 3 days a week of strength training, right? And then for the strength trainer, we'll take his strength training routine down to 2 days of weightlifting or strength, and then 3 days of running.
And I'm personally very excited that you talked about the push and the shoulders, because Craig and I were just talking about this earlier, and I was like, a lot of runners are going to be in pain because they round their shoulders. So I'm just personally psyched right now.
Feels very validated.
Very validated. Sorry, Craig, I cut you off.
Oh, no, it's excited. Okay. I mean, I think it obviously depends on the goal. And I think one of the things, and obviously, you know, as Rachel said, if your goal is to, you know, we said like this is, you know, the first 6 months, eventually these people start to blend together as they are building up capacity in whatever discipline that they didn't have before. But one of the things that I think Rachel did really well when she kind of was doing this on her own, and this was just kind of protect herself. And then this, speaking of being validated, like, she was like, my God, I actually did that perfectly by accident when she got the certification, is the building up of mileage. And that goes back to the 80-20 part. And, you know, I would say even, you know, if you're brand new to running, make just run easy, do 100% at first, easy running, just start to really build up the ground contact, you know, tolerance, start to build up the aerobic capacity. And, you know, you don't need to do an interval run to start. Now, when you start to work on getting faster, you're going to have to eventually run fast. Like, you can't get faster just running slow, but you can get faster mostly running slow. And mm-hmm. and that aerobic capacity, and one of the things that I think is great, that, you know, I'm stealing Rachel's material here because she's the one who actually took the cert, but one of the things that I thought was really great out of it is your body doesn't know what a mile is, but your body does know what an hour is. And so as you start to get into running, like, the only way to be able to run for the amount of time that you need without wearing out, without putting yourself at risk for injury, is to run slow. Because otherwise it's too intense. So Rachel, I'll let you expand on it, but that's the basic premise of kind of, as you get started, something to think about is I need to be able to expand my time running. And the only way to do that is to make sure that I don't go too intensely that 15 minutes into my run, I'm dead. If the goal, you know, if you got to the point that say you're at 30 minutes, which is not where you should be starting, but say you got into that point, you can't burn yourself out in 15 and still run for 30.
Totally. And that's exactly correct, right? Because what I said earlier about how this needs to be hyper individualized and hyper specific. If I tell two runners, one who's on their first ever run and somebody who's on their 9,000th run, to go run a 5K, they're not getting the same workout. That's mm-hmm. not the same workout. That's not fair. Just like if you hand someone who's a novice lifter a barbell and you go squat, and it's, you know, a power lifter, they're not getting the same challenge, and that's not appropriate. And so I would definitely like prioritize that. And for our new runner, there are two things I kind of want to know, and it's, what's your goal? And for most runners, a goal is a race, right? Especially a new runner, they're like, oh, I signed up for this 5K, I signed up for this 10K, or I want to sign up for one. I want to know what it is, what's the length of the race, and I want to know when the race is going to be, right? Because that determines the length of our training cycle. And when we talk about how important time is for running, I want to know how much time we have. How many cycles can we get through? How much can I program for you? And then I treat it less so an hour a day, like we started with as a prompt, but more, how many minutes of running a week are we going to do? And running can include walking, right? But it's, how many minutes a week are we going to spend trying to get stronger as a runner? And that's really, really important, because the adaptations that happen for runners happen at your slow, easy runs, because your running economy improves. You're better able to facilitate your own running in a joyful and pleasant and enjoyable way. Your heart rate will absolutely adapt. And that is kind of the most objective measurement, right? Like, when we talk about these easy runs, it's not a set pace for everyone. Some people find a 8 minute mile to be really easy because they've been doing it for their lifetime. Some people, it's a 14 minute mile, right? And I'm not saying one of those is better. It's simply just a measure of time and where that person is at. And it's really important to, like, check your ego. I forget who said this, but someone said, your ego is not your amigo. And that is so incredibly true with running, where most injuries are a result of, like, bad programming or bad form. That's it. That's where most things come to the wire, if you will. And so that's kind of what I want to know up front, is like, how much time do we have and what are we trying to accomplish? And no matter what the goal is, whether it's a 10K, a 5K, a marathon, half marathon, your first few weeks are just going to be volume based, and volume is slow, frequent mileage. And that could be 20 minutes of running three times a week for the first 3 weeks, just to build your base, get comfortable, learn how it feels to run, and like let your body adapt both like muscularly and aerobically.
The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by Momentous. And Chris, I remember when Momentous was just a company with three protein blends, and then
that was it.
Now, pretty much anything in the supplement game you can get at livemomentous.com.
That's right. If you go to livemomentous.com right now, you might not even recognize some of these products. And for me, I'm definitely going to change my monthly subscription. I've been getting the Brain Drive. I've been getting the Elite Sleep. I've been getting the Collagen. And it looks like I need to up my game a little bit and take a look at some of these products like the Alpha.
Yeah, no doubt. And what's great about Momentous' website, which you can go to right now, livemomentous.com, is that they also have a lot of descriptions and information on best usage, best practices. It's not just like, hey, here's all this stuff. It's like, hey, are you looking for this? Well, then you should get that. So any supplementation needs you may have, they've got you covered. And it's stuff that, like, look, if you want the four-hour description on what Tongat Ali does, you go to the Huberman Lab podcast. They got you covered. That's not us. But it might be something that you need, so go check it out. And here's what we do have for you. We have a discount. LiveMomentous.com. Use TWTB at checkout for a special discount. TWTB is in Train with the Best at LiveMomentous.com. The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by Jocku. And we've been partners with Jocku for basically a year now, Chris. Can't believe how much the time has flown by. And it's still just as spectacular as it was when we discovered it.
It's plain and simple. Good, reliable timing on your speed drills, on your multi-directional drills. You know, how many of us who are speed coaches just need a good, accurate time out there to verify, one, the results that we're getting, and two, the trends that we're going in, right? So this is a great product for anybody who is a speed trainer or anybody who works with athletes. And now you're even able to track vertical jump, which is such a valuable tool when you're taking a look at somebody's program. So make sure you check out Jocku. And Craig, what's the code that you should be using?
You go to jocku.com/discount/TWTB. You get a 20% discount on all Jocku products, so the muscle blasters and everything as well. But yeah, I mean, I used to always love coming down to Onyx, testing my vertical on the Vertec machine. Now I don't even have to do that. You don't need a big, giant, high ceiling to have a Vertec and be able to extend it up. You just put the Jocku on your wrist, set it up. There you go. It's all cell phone app based. So go to jocku.com/discount/TWTB. Get 20% off the Jocku Speed and all other Jocku products. The Train with the Best podcast is brought to you by BlazePod. And Chris, what's so great about BlazePod is you can use it in every part of the workout. You can use it to help warm up. You can use it in kind of your main parts of the workout. You can use it as a finisher. What's your go-to recently with BlazePod?
Yeah, for me, what I love using BlazePod for is just keeping our athletes engaged. So, you know, you can get into the rut of the workout where you're doing time sets. If you've got 30-second plank, a 30-second wall sit or whatever. But if you add BlazePods to that, now that 30 seconds doesn't seem like it's so long. And it keeps the clients a little bit more engaged, a little bit more motivated to perform well. And it's something that just adds a lot of fun to the session.
No doubt. We could all use a little attention for our inner child. And who doesn't love stuff that lights up? And oh, by the way, it's an elite training tool, the best of all worlds. And of course, we got the hookup for you. Use the code TWTB at blazepod.com for 15% off your order. That's TWTB is in Train with the Best for 15% off at blazepod.com.
So is it safe to say from what I'm hearing that in the beginning, as a novice, your intervals and your runs are going to be based on time versus when you become a little bit more experienced, your intervals and your weeks are going to be based off of distances, right? Like, so for instance, Candace Broaddus, who is a trainer of ours, like she knows like she wants to run this many miles per week, whereas a beginner is going to say, hey, I want to run for this many minutes in a week.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
You definitely can. I, even with an elite runner, I'd probably look at it in terms of minutes. When you get to like the Boston qualifier, right? When you get to the Megan Featherston, if you will, like she has a mileage in mind because her body is super attuned to what that looks like. She understands what her race pace is. And right. And like when we think about some of the more intense runs that people go on, when they're talking about like acidosis threshold and like that's just lactate threshold, their AT runs and like their sprints and working on those mechanics, those are people who are basing those off of their race pace. So they know like, oh, my race pace is a 6:30 mile. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something that's available to a newer runner, and it shouldn't be. But even those people I could train, and I would make a case for training in terms of their minutes running, because that's truly where your body learns the adaptation. And we see that in part because sometimes when you're trying to increase mileage just overall, you'll suggest that a runner break up their run. You'll be like, oh, do 20 minutes easy in the morning, 20 minutes evening in like easy in the evening to get your 40 minutes of running in your day because your body's not used to. But there will come a time where it's like, it's important that you run for 60 minutes because your body is going to go through some changes and adapt differently to that run than just simply like getting more miles over the course of a week. But it should be consumed as a whole, in my opinion. So
yeah, I mean, if you think about like a mile repeats workout, if someone is going all out and they're a 9-minute mile, that's a very different ask of your body than Eliud Kipchoge doing mile repeats at 4:04 or whatever. So like we're talking about literally the double the time versus like, all right, we want you to run hard for 4 minutes and then rest for whatever. Like once you start to work in some of those interval things. I think that's, you know, that's like the important thing to keep in mind of that total time. And I think also it like kind of brings up kind of a bringing together of some of the things that we've said here, which is, you know, we talked about strength days versus run days. You can do both. You know, you have to pick what the priority is, but if you have an hour, and the reason I organize it that way is because often, like I'm thinking of a parent, right, who they've got an hour lunch break or an hour at mm-hmm. between 5 and 6 p.m. when their kid's at soccer practice and like they've got a hard schedule. Like how are they efficient with their time? And that's kind of, I was trying to make it like a human realistic thing. And so maybe the answer for one day is like, I'm going to do 10 minutes of mobility, a 20 minute easy run, or as you get more advanced, 20 minutes of intervals or whatever your run is. And then you do whatever weight work goes with that. So you can mix and match. You need to be smart with what you mix, what you match. You know, you're not going to do like a hard interval day and then your heavy squats immediately following. But could you do 10 minutes of mobility, 20 minutes of intervals, take 5 minutes to cool down, do some upper body work, your pull up, whatever. And that's pretty challenging. And then finish up with some supplementary auxiliary work. Yeah, you could do that all within an hour and be pretty efficient with your time. So I think this is, you know, we talk the tagline of the podcast. This is a podcast by Fit Pros for Fit Pros. Like if you're training someone, you need to be able to think creatively and problem solve within the realistic constraints of what they have available and what you have available based off of equipment. If you're training them at their house, or, you know, if you're in a gym, like obviously you got whatever, like don't be afraid to use the treadmill. If your gym happens to be off of a path and you want to go run with them, like some clients will be in for that. But it gets down to that, like personalized, individualized, whatever, within the time and space constraints that you have, which, you know, that's universal across any program, any goal, but that can be applied to this running strength training combo.
Yeah. And I just want to jump in, Chris, because I think that there's a space in this where like you may have a client who's like, you know what? I really want to chase a running goal. Like I'm seeing all this stuff mm-hmm. about marathons. I want to get after it. Like, how can you help me? And you're like, in a myriad of ways I can help you. But if you're like, Rachel, what do you think? And they're a newer runner. I might say to you, Chris, can we look at 4 weeks out? Just like take these first 4 weeks as our first cycle. Tell them we're looking to get 100 minutes in 1 week of quality cardio. So like I would say 100 minutes the first week, 100 minutes the second week, maybe 150 week three, and then treat week four as like a deload. And it can be a combination of walking and running, right? It doesn't have to be all running, but mm-hmm. like on the days where you're like, no, we have to focus on our lift, like let's do our lift first, and like let's in the afternoon after work or after dinner, like go for a walk and a jog or something that's like restorative, fairly light, and you know, that is, I think, pretty approachable for most people. And I would guide them to like look at their heart rate, right? Because that's going to be your telltale. I have so many clients I've looked at who are like, oh, I ran easy. It's like 170. I'm like, really? Did you? Do you run easy when you're having like a cardiac event? So like I want to like, let's see a 135. Let's see a 140, you know, heart rate. And that'll be keeping them honest, but that gives you like room to negotiate with them and be like, all right, we're looking at this as a week. Like how do I program as your trainer around this and how do I support you? So that's like one method, I think.
Yeah. So I want to get into a little bit of those combo days that you guys are referring to, because I think that once you get into the combo days, because in the beginning it will probably be somebody who's never lifted or somebody who's never run, we're probably not going to combine too much of it in the very beginning.
Nope.
Then towards 3 months, 6 months, once we've been able to adapt to this, right, and your body has gone through that, I would say that we keep our hard days hard and our easy days easy. And here's what I mean by that, because I actually wouldn't shy away from doing a hard interval day with a heavy squat day, as long as we're doing the heavy squats, like as long as you cut the volume on those squats and we know what those squats look like, right? So for instance, if I'm going to do a pretty high speed day, I would do maybe 20, 30 minutes of high speed intervals and then like a 20 to 30 minute lift, but like that lift is only going to be maybe 30 to 50 reps total in that entire lift, right? And that's my hard day, so it's hard. And then I have a day where I get to recover. And then the easy days, I say easy, but they're not easy, but the less intense days, I would say, I flip that. So in the hard days, I would do my sprint work or my speed work first, followed by a lift. Whereas on my days where I'm going to do a long run, I would do some of my functional strength work first and then do my 30-minute run after that, something like that, right? So it depends on what type of run and what type of lift that you're doing. But I'm a big believer in keeping your hard days hard and your easy days easy versus having like 5 days that are kind of all the same. I want days that are a little bit harder and days that are a little bit easier.
So let me ask you this then, because I think of the way that Zoe train for sure. during the season, right? The hardest mm-hmm. day he has is Sunday, his game day. And then sure. he would heavy squat on Monday. Is there a world where you lift heavy on an easy day, where that's just kind of the you get your quick bang for buck, heavy, low volume, and then get out, and that's your easy day? Maybe like that's the day after your long run.
Yeah, so Zoe's in-season workout, right? Like we would actually do our like functional recover day on the Monday, and then our heavy strength day was Wednesday, and then our heavy speed day was Friday, with his game being on Sunday. So that was how we did that. But when we did like our off season, right? Like our off season was, we would double up on Monday, double up on Tuesday, double up on Thursday, and then have one workout on Friday. So he has that Wednesday work, and I want like Tuesday to be the hard day, where we do a lot of like our change of direction stuff. Change of direction for an athlete is much harder than just our straight line sprints, and we would pair that, like that would be our heavy lift day with like squat. And then Friday we would come in and Thursday we'd come in and do bench, and then Friday would be like a light recovery day. So Tuesdays were always the hard days for us when we were in the off season.
Got it. That then brings kind of the last piece of this, which is and we've done more extensive podcasts on this in the past, but just kind of to bring it all in one place, like what does the actual strength training look like? Right. That's obviously pretty important. Mobility is going to play a huge role. I do think, you know, if there's a movement element to your training, like getting people, and even if there's not like a movement skills, even with the lifts, getting people moving in different directions, different planes, because running is all sagittal, becomes absolutely very important. So, Chris, when you have a runner that comes to you and is like, I would like to supplement my running with strength training, what are some of the key boxes to check for you on the actual workout itself?
Yeah, I think you mentioned some of it is I got to get them moving in all planes of motion. I've got to mobilize the hips. I've got to mobilize the ankles. I've got to do something for the posture. And so, like, if I have an hour workout, and like I said, like, I think the hour is something that people usually just notch out in their day because it's easy to say, hey, I'm going to dedicate an hour to this. But
it's really like, nice on your Google calendar.
If it's nice, just but like, yeah, nobody says that, hey, I'm going to dedicate 47 minutes to a workout. but like when you're done, right? So if I was to work off an hour, 40 minutes of that hour would probably be like movement prep type stuff and mobility and core work and stabilizing and coordination and balance and all the other stuff. 20 minutes of that is actually all I need to actually lift. And in those 20 minutes, like I said, I only need maybe 30 reps to get somebody to where I need them to get to in terms of strength training. If I'm using proper loads, if I'm using proper intensities, if I'm getting them into a movement pattern that's simple enough for them to be able to execute with good form at high intensities, I don't need 100 reps. I need 30.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, the single leg work becomes really important. You know, like you said, the pull work becomes really important. So there's certain things to prioritize. The last thing that I think we should tack on here real quick is a warm up, because this is an epidemic amongst runners of I'm just going to go out and kind of work into my run over my first mile, 2 miles, 3 miles. And it's like, if you've run 3 miles, I don't care how fast you are. That shouldn't be your warm up. You should have done something first. So like if you're trying to get someone to minimize injury risk, like, yep, let's give them a 2 to 5 minute warm up of things they should do to just be like, hey, can you sacrifice 5 minutes to get this warm up in? Cause I feel like that's typically the point where the negotiation feels less like a hostage negotiation and more like something that I can actually get someone to do.
Yeah, so something as an active stretch, right? Something as a follow that active stretch with the dynamic stretch. So when I say active stretch, like a knee hug or a quad pull, you're holding it for like 2 seconds or whatever it is. Like hamstring scoops is a popular one for runners, right? So do some of those. Follow that up with something a little bit more dynamic, like a leg swing, where we're getting a little bit more ballistic with that. And then you can get into some of your movement skills. And here's what I always say, like low – plyometrics has to be a part of your sprinting running program, because if you're not doing plyometrics, you're not preparing your body for running. Running is plyometric, right? So what do we know about runners? In addition to what you were talking about with the shoulders rounded forward and all this and that, right? Runners are typically people who are not very mobile. They don't lift their knees all the way up to their chest when they're running their mile pace, right? They don't pick up their knees that much. So if they're in that type of gait for hours and hours and hours during the week, they get pretty tight. We need to be able to mobilize them, right? And that's why they have a hard time doing like the big plyometrics, because typically when you look at plyometrics, like we're talking about on social media, it's like, I got to jump on a 60-inch box. That's not what plyometrics are. Like a plyometric is just a rapid eccentric stretch followed by a rapid concentric force production, right? So if we do low-level plyometrics like jump rope, like skips, right? Like small low-level bounding, all of these things can help build that tolerance, that low-level tolerance and resiliency in that lower leg, which is so important. People get all these like different injuries in the lower leg because they haven't built that resiliency. So I would make sure that that's a part of everything that we do, especially like on a warm-up for a run day, low-level plyometrics.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. They also help get your heart rate up a little bit, which even if you're trying to keep your heart rate in the 120s, 130s, 140s, like if you just start to run, your body's going to be like, hey, what's happening? And all of a sudden, that was my Seinfeld came out there, Rachel. Hey!
Very Jerry.
What's the deal with grape nuts?
Yeah, what's the deal with your heart rate going up, man? It comes back. So you go up to like 165, and then eventually it'll settle back in to 142, which is like where you wanted it. But if you can, in your warm-up, get that spike a little bit out of the way and your body's actually like, you know, warm, imagine that in a warm-up, you can kind of get started on your run at that heart rate that you want.
Yeah, and I know we talked about it before, but you should be breathing a little bit hard after a warm-up. Like it shouldn't just be like, okay, I touched my toes, I'm ready to go. Like you should be breathing a little bit.
Although if I can touch my toes, I'm quite limber, let me tell you. That's a long way down. Anybody want to add anything else to any of this?
Yeah, I think I would just remind folks that like when it comes to running, that easy run isn't just like a fad. Most of your runs have to be easy because for most run challenges, you're trying to run longer and you're not just going to go from 0 miles to 26.2 miles in 6 weeks, right? And so when we talk about those easy runs, you're not doing it because you can't go faster. You're not doing it because it's going to ruin your life if you go faster one time. You're doing it because at the end of the goal is an actual mileage and you need to progress to it. And this is how you get there. One foot in front of the other. And the other last thing I would say is that runners are notoriously like psychologically resilient and you build that up over time too. It's really hard to run for 20 minutes at first. It gets a lot easier. And then one day you're running for 100 minutes, 120 minutes. And you're like, yeah, I just let my mind do what it has to do. And so there's a lot of resilience that comes with running, but it takes a lot of patience.
I would say running is also a perfect opportunity to habit stack. If anybody is familiar with the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, it's a great book. I would definitely read it. It's very similar to The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, which we've recommended a number of times. But he talks about habit stacking, where you do something that you know you need to do with something you know you don't want to do, right? And then that becomes a habit loop, that which creates that routine and that reward that makes things more sustainable. So if you can listen to a podcast like this one while you're on your run, that's a great way to habit stack and create the motivation to run.
7 years into this, and I finally got Chris to promote the podcast. Yes.
Hey,
I was actually gonna say that, it might take you one start slow. Like, Rachel literally did not run for longer than 10 minutes for 2 months when she started.
It was not cool.
Yeah. And it was, she was scared that she was going to hurt her ankle, and eventually she felt good. And then she bumped up to a whopping 15. And then it was one day I was like, I think I'm going to run for 20. And now she'll go on a 100-minute long run. So it does really behoove you to start slow, because you can convince yourself a lot easier to run for 10 minutes than you can for 30. But if you work your way up, I would never thought I was going to be able to run for 90 minutes. I was like, that was not appealing. But all of a sudden, we're running for an hour, and I was like, I don't know, an extra 15. Okay, now we're at 75. And then it's like, okay, I can do an extra 15. And you build it up, that mental resilience, slowly. But also what has helped is I found a nice mix of music and podcasts that works for me. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got to find, some people run with nothing, be alone with your thoughts. I know it's terrifying, but be alone with your thoughts and just enjoy the nature and the sounds. If you're running outside, that can be really mentally clarifying, allows you to think through whatever it is you got to work on. And that can be great. So find your thing, start slow, build slow. And
in reference to building slow, and I know we keep saying last thing, but I do want to put this out there, because people ask this question a lot, right?
Yeah.
Footwear, because that's going to be really important for somebody who's never run and they're starting to run. And the opposite for somebody who always runs and wants to lift. So for somebody who always runs and wants to lift, I'm probably going to have them start barefoot in the gym. And we're going to start building some of the strength underneath the foot. Whereas somebody who's never run before, what type of footwear, how important, how valuable is it for them to go to a running store where they're going to get evaluated and get the proper footwear?
If you literally don't own running sneakers, you should go get looked at. Just a quick analysis. They're going to be like, oh, you pronate. Oh, that leg looks a little you wobble, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And they can just give you something that's going to provide an appropriate amount of cushioning. Do not just buy something because it's trendy or looks cool.
Go run in Nike 270s.
No, don't do that.
Unless your running store says that's the right shoe for your foot.
They won't.
They probably won't.
But that's what I was getting to, is because you see so many people I have running shoes, these Nikes that all the teenagers are wearing with and those are not running shoes.
100%. People will put a little too much emphasis on their running sneaker and be like, oh, I have to get the Vaporfly. And I'm like, all right, well, you haven't run more than 45 minutes in a week in your life. So that's really the Vapor, you don't need a $250 Nike running shoe. That's not going to change your life. So that's not going to make or break you, but improper footwear really in either activity is going to jeopardize your well-being long term. Yeah. So,
and most running stores have a 30-day, try it. If you don't like it, bring it back deal. And utilize that, get a shoe that you think is the best. And if you don't like it, don't be afraid to go back and be like, hey, can we try that other shoe? I mean, Rachel and I have both sat in front of about 7 boxes and been like, sorry, can we try the next one? but for us, I will say this, we both happen to really like the same shoe. The Saucony Endorphin has been our shoe, to the point that we found it, we love it. We saw them on sale and we bought more when we get through the mileage on our first one. And I'm now on my second one. She's on her second, and the third is sitting in our closet.
Yeah. I'm starting to break the third in. Yeah.
And so we found what works for us and we're just sticking with it. No need to get overly creative.
Yeah. But I know for me, when I started training for the tri, it was Brooks Yeah. Brooks made a shoe that was like perfect for my foot. And I was today years old when I found out how to pronounce Saucony. Wow. I kept on saying Saucony for my whole life. So
I think that's right.
I've been told Saucony.
Okay.
You're right. I made up Saucony. So Saucony is
they're
what
great.
It is.
But mostly it's what your foot and what your body needs.
Right. Yeah.
Don't go off fashion.
Yeah. That was my point. Don't just go get the Nikes. Take a look at like some of the legit running shoes, the legit running stores that are out there, because this matters, and it's going to make your running journey so much more enjoyable just by selecting the proper footwear.
100%. All right, that's a great place to end. So we're done. This has been the Train with the Best podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week.